So today, we heard a parable of Jesus that's only found in Luke, but one that's very familiar to us. It seems so clear. However, this parable is a lot more confrontational than even to us than we might expect. So we'll enter into that today. When we hear this parable, we're drawn to identify with the tax collector, due to his demonstration of humility, as opposed to the Pharisee who displays a sense of moral superiority. Be humble like the tax collector, and don't be haughty like that of the Pharisee, and you'll be justified, made righteous before God. It's simple, isn't it? And we can even start to think that the practices of the Pharisee, you know, fasting, tithing, being careful to obey the Torah, trying to be holy like God himself even, these are mistaken, perhaps. The tax collector is right to do nothing than just other than just throw himself on the mercy of God. We might even say, well, it doesn't matter too much that we're just sinners. I mean, we're all sinners, aren't we? God is merciful. And after all, Jesus hangs out with sinners, doesn't he? However, that doesn't really align with what Jesus says elsewhere. For example, in the Sermon on the Mount, when he says, our righteousness must exceed that of the Pharisees. And the difficulty with seeing this parable as just saying we need to be humble is we might as well end up praying, Lord, I thank you that I'm not like other people, hypocrites, overly pious, self-righteous, or even like that Pharisee. We come to church each week, we listen attentively to your scriptures, and we have learned that we always must be humble. Perhaps we don't go as far as quite praying that. But we may still say when we see someone who's having difficulty in life, there, but for the grace of God, go I. You know, in order to avoid that sort of self-congratulation in our prayer or just in our speech, and the parable itself seems to condemn that, actually. It may help to note that, in fact, everything that the Pharisee says is true. Pharisees were actually, on the whole, pious, careful living, defenders of God and his ways. They were trying to ensure the continuity of faith in Israel's God for all of God's people. They were fasting and giving beyond the basic requirements. And meanwhile, the tax collector was actually collaborating with the Roman occupiers and probably extracting unjustly from his community to make more on the side. Your tax collectors were typically dishonest and greedy. They were like, in some ways, the mobsters of their day, and they certainly denied mercy to others in their dealings with them. And Pharisees were not usually legalists who were trying to earn God's favor. That was not in their heads at all. They were a Jewish stream that emphasized the importance of obedience to the law of Moses. They were living in accordance with the Torah as a way of making God's benefits visible and accessible in all aspects of life for all people to live. For example, you could say that they were a bit like the evangelicals of their day. You know, as evangelicals, we may emphasize living according to the Bible and therefore being moral, as that is, after all, the way of life that God made us to live, the best way for all people to live. For example, by being sexually faithful, having a regard to the value of the life that God has given us. Yeah, that all people have that value of life, right at the beginning of life and right at the end of life as well. Now, these are things that evangelicals would very much uphold, just like the Pharisees would uphold right living. Evangelicals may encourage daily Bible reading, having a daily prayer time, praying for and giving to missions, doing regular Bible study. So these are practices that lead to us being serious about our faith, our biblical faith. And that's what the Pharisees were actually in their time. They were the people who really wanted to help others to be serious about their faith in God, their relationship with God. And Jesus shared similarities with the Pharisees and commended their teaching and their concerns, even though at times he obviously criticized them as well for where their heart was. But meanwhile, Christians tend to have a totally negative view of Pharisees and will even label someone as a Pharisee who they think of as hypocritical or self-righteous or affected by a commitment to false forms of religion. So we need to be careful here. Who are we really identifying with in this parable? This parable sets a bit of a trap. Whenever we want to be critical of one of the characters or distinguish ourselves and our values clearly from one of them, the parable exposes the contempt, the disdain that we are actually harboring. What is contempt? It's what we show when we think we know better than God who should receive mercy and how they should receive it. It isn't that the Pharisee is speaking falsely, but rather the Pharisee misses the true nature of his blessing. As Luke states at the beginning of this parable, he has trusted in himself and had contempt for the other. His prayer of gratitude may be spoken to the Lord, but it's really about himself. He locates his righteousness entirely in his own actions and his own being. And the Pharisee's problem is that he regards the tax collector with contempt, but doesn't pray for mercy for himself. He assumes his corrupt neighbor has actually situated himself beyond God's mercy, when in truth he hasn't. The tax collector, on the other hand, he knows that he possesses no means by which to claim righteousness. He's done nothing of merit. Indeed, he has done much to offend the law of Moses, the law of Israel. And for this reason, he stands with head bowed. Notice they both stand for prayer. That's the normal way in which a Jew prays. But he stands without lifting his head, and he beats his chest, and he throws himself on the mercy of the Lord. So here's the essential contrast. One makes a claim to righteousness based on his own accomplishments, while the other relies entirely upon the Lord's grace and mercy. Rather than be grateful for his blessings, the Pharisee appears almost smug to the point of despising others. In his mind, there are two kinds of people, the righteous and the immoral. And he's grateful that he's placed himself among the righteous. The tax collector, on the other hand, isn't so much humble as desperate. He's too overwhelmed by his plight to take time to divide humanity into sides. All he recognizes as he stands in the temple is his own great need. He therefore stakes his hopes and claims not on anything he has done or deserved, but entirely on the mercy of God. Now, in the temple, there were always insiders and outsiders. It was divided into different courts for who was in each part. And according to the rules, there was no question of where the Pharisee and the tax collector stood. You know, the Pharisee in the place of righteousness, supposedly, and the tax collector in the place of, for the sinner. And yet, when Jesus dies, all that changes. As the Gospels report, the curtain in the temple is torn in two, symbolically erasing all those divisions of humanity before God. That act is anticipated here as God justifies not the one favored by the temple law, but rather the one only aware of his utter need. So as soon as we fall into that temptation of dividing humanity into any kind of groups, we've aligned ourselves with the Pharisee. Whether our division is between righteous and sinners, as with the Pharisee, or even between the self-righteous and the humble, we're condemned. Anytime you draw a line between who's in and who's out, this parable asserts you will find God on the other side. This parable is about God who alone can judge the human heart. God who determines to justify the ungodly. Now, at the end of this story, the Pharisee will leave the temple and return to home as righteous as he was. This hasn't changed. He thought he was righteous when he came up, and he thinks he's righteous as he goes back down. Nothing's changed for him, and he didn't expect anything. So he didn't really meet God. And the tax collector, however, will leave the temple and go back to his home, made righteous by the Holy One of Israel, in a restored relationship with God. He called out to God, and he truly met him. How has this happened? The tax collector makes neither sacrifice nor restitution. He doesn't sort of give all the promises, for example, that Zacchaeus did. So on what basis then is he named as righteous? It's on the basis of God's divine will and grace. It's outrageous that God shows mercy so easily to such a villain. This is absurdly generous grace. It's like that which is given to the prodigal son or to the workers who only started work at the end of the day. This upends the expectations that a respectable religious person, or an evangelical even, possesses advantages before God over an obvious sinner. God desires contrition, not contempt, not dismissive attitudes towards others. Unless we forget our human constructed divisions and stand before God aware only of our need, then we, like the Pharisee, will not meet him in his grace. Rather, if we call out to him in awareness of our need for mercy, if we bring our burdens and our brokenness to him. We are made righteous by the God of grace, the God of Jesus Christ, and we're invited to return to our homes in mercy, grace, and gratitude. So how shall we pray to a wildly merciful and gracious God? How shall we live, having learned of such boundless mercy?